Namaste. Welcome to the I Hanuman podcast. This current offering is an interview with yoga teacher Chandra Om. Chandra is the senior disciple of the much loved and respected Sri Dharma Mitra and founder of the North Carolina School of Yoga in Raleigh, North Carolina. She teaches traditional classical yoga in the lineage of her guru and has dedicated her life to spiritual practice and service to humanity. In this interview, Chandra tells the story of her journey with Sri Dharma Mitra and shares her wisdom and perspective on guru bhakti and the necessity of living masters, the spiritual import of asana, karma yoga, and the history and impetus behind the North Carolina School of Yoga. Enjoy. Again, Chandra, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I got the wonderful privilege of taking a class with you last night, and I enjoyed it very much. And I've also had the privilege of taking classes with Sri Dharma Mitra as well. And the greatest compliment that I can give to you is that I felt him last night through you. So
thank you.
Yeah. So if you would just start by telling a little about you and your path and how you came to yoga and how you came to meet your teacher.
Oh, all right. Well, I had been studying for a little while, not very long, about 2 years. And in the midst of that, I was reading some of the modern masters, Swami Shivananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, Swami Sachidananda, and Swami Vishnu Devananda, and some of the others. And in all of the autobiographical information, I believed that type of discipleship was still available, even though we're living in the, more modern climate of yoga. I would read some of the personal accounts, and I knew that was what I was interested in studying, that I was interested not in just studying a little yoga. I wanted to be a yogi. I wanted to study under a guru. And so not because I was looking for something, to acquire any powers or anything, but just I wanted to study self-realization. And I believed what the masters said about that a guru is necessary. And so I believed that that type of discipleship must still exist somewhere. And so I began studying with a very wonderful yogi in New York, Swami Bua. Do you know him? He's a disciple of Swami Shivananda. He is now 118. He's still living in New York, although he just left for India for 4 months. He has not been back to India in 25 years, and they're having a big celebration for him. So I was with him for 2 years. And even though I was learning traditional yoga, and I was really blessed to be with such a master, I knew in my heart that he was not my guru, you understand? So then I just kept praying and praying. I kept talking to God, please, may I be worthy to find my guru. Whatever blockages are there preventing me, please let me have some divine assistance to remove them. So then one day Swami Bua said, I think you belong to Dharma Mitra. Do you know him? I had no idea. He said, well, he's on 23rd Street downtown. Swami Bhu is right on 58th, so not far. And I grew up in New York, so right under the nose. So then the next day I went to see Sri Dharma Mitra, and I just, the moment that I, well, as I was there waiting for class to begin, I had my mat out and I was just sitting, observing everything going around, and then Dharma came up and said, it's you. And then I said, oh, yes. And I thought that Swami Bhua had told him, look, I'm sending this girl to you. You understand? She needs some help. Help her out, whatever. She's looking for something. Be nice to her. But then, no, he didn't. I found out later. He didn't say anything. And then by the end of that class, I was just, I knew. I just knew. I couldn't stop crying. I knew that I was home, and I was overcome with gratitude. I didn't feel sad at all, you understand. It was just an overwhelming, it's like a big exhale. And just a tremendous gratitude to God, to all of the masters that have prepared the path. And then I had the good fortune to, for some reason, the guru accepted me very instantly. It took a while he began to work with me immediately. And then I just, I don't know, everything that the scriptures say, all of the yogis say about the necessity of a preceptor, is 100% true. There's no question about it. And I owe everything to my guru, and I'm wholly indebted to him for being patient with me and imparting spiritual knowledge, and for also for the having the courage to tell me what nobody else would, to help to clean up some ego behavior, you understand. So even for the scoldings and the reprimands, I always felt so grateful. For me, the guru is, I didn't have any resistance, you understand? I never saw another teacher again. I didn't feel resistant at all. And so even for, I'm most grateful for, I don't know why. I always say that to students. I don't understand why, what type of karma or what I did in the past that allowed me to surrender to the guru's teachings almost instantly. Because my guru is a traditional yogi. And even though he is renowned around the world as a phenomenal hatha yogi, that's very little in terms of our lineage, even though I like that, but you understand, and he always said that yoga is obedience to the teacher. And that you must be obedient Otherwise, you're not going to go anywhere. So, I don't know. That's a little. Maybe if you have any other questions.
Yeah, and also, don't feel like you have to be bound by my questions as well. You know, if there's anything else that you feel like wants to come through, you know, by all means.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Guru Bhakti, you know, here in America, there are so many people who don't understand it, you know, and they're, it's such a different culture than in India, where relationships with the guru, they're so much more natural. Do you know what I'm saying? It comes so much easier. it's great to hear how just how lucky you are to have had that experience, to have fallen into an experience where you know your home, you know where it feels right, and it doesn't feel like you had a choice in the matter. I don't think very many people have that experience, whether it's their karma or, you know, or whatever. So do you feel like the most important thing for people to do is to prepare themselves to meet masters in the body? Do you think that's essential? You know, it was definitely, obviously, very essential to you. You feel that it was necessary. Are there enough masters in the States? Are there enough students in here who are ready for the, you know, for living teachers to have that relationship and what it requires?
I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that kind of question, but you said people. You mean yogis or just the
yogis.
Civilians?
Yogis.
All right, what was the question?
The question was, there, you know, there are so many people who do yoga, whether it's, you know, do you find a lot of students are ready to take this not as a class that you do a couple times a week, but have it to be an essential part of a bigger sadhana, you know, where it's not you're coming to an asana class, but this asana is somehow incorporated into this bigger context of self-realization, and it has a deeper relevance to that. And this bigger sadhana, you know, should it include guru bhakti, you know, satsang with and darshan with masters, and how available is that to, you know, most yogis?
Well, it's always available. It's just according to one's karma. If they... I know what I want to say. I just have to think of the most succinct way to say it. I know what's happening. And I see that the climate of yoga is more physically oriented and people altering the classical tradition, making their own hybrids and different things. But I think it's okay if people do that as long as they're not looking for name and fame. If they are doing it because God is speaking to them, there's something really passing through. You're not involved in the I part of that, you understand? But is a guru essential? And I think yes. I say because my guru always said anything that a teacher ever tells you should be backed up by scripture, any scripture. Anything a teacher tells you, you should be able to go to a scripture, find, all right, that's true. So I think that it, I don't know. I probably shouldn't tiptoe around this. I think, yes, a guru is essential, of course, because spiritual knowledge can only be imparted psychically. Spiritual knowledge can only be imparted from the guru to the disciple. That's all. You may do your, you may read a book, you may go to your class, you may do all of your nice exercises and your breathings and different things, and maybe even have a little bit of self-knowledge. You may awaken your kundalini a little bit. Maybe your consciousness going to go up a little bit. But unless you have ignition from the preceptor, then your meditation is only going to go so far. Then it's going to be a void. Like you desperately are looking to go a little bit farther, but not really going anywhere more than what you were able to cultivate on your own from your own spiritual tapas previously, your karmas from the past. Some people can become self-realized in a year or two of strict practice because they've been doing it for many lifetimes. But is the guru's ignition or transmission necessary? I say yes. That's all. I don't know if... And then are the gurus available these days in the West? Yes. I know many. And I only have one, but my guru right there in New York City, teaching every day for almost 50 years, quietly, in Swami Boo uptown, quiet. Then even my guru's guru is still alive, New York. Quiet. And then, of course, there are others. You have Guru Swami Satchidananda, right? He only had Mahasamadhi a short time ago. So look, all the people he helped, that's still in our modern era, you understand? So I think yes. But you have to be sure that you're following someone who is really illumined, someone that has really done their purification and they're following the tradition, because sometimes maybe they're not involved in yama and niyama, you understand? Because you... Am I talking too much? All right. I remember my guru always said, yama is the first step of yoga. Without yama, there is no yoga. And I don't care. I always say, I don't care. You can throw your legs behind your head, stand on one finger completely inverted, if you're not a nice person. You understand? If you don't have kindness in your heart, or you're involved, you feel so puffed with, I am doing this, Chandra is so great, you understand, or whoever, then it's a big deal. That's actually binding you more, creating more and more rajas. That's not going to lead you anywhere. Very soon, all that's going to disappear. You're going to break something, then suffer like hell because you can't do your like you used to. You understand? Suddenly, this hurt, everything. But if you really doing your postures as an offering to the Lord, to the Supreme Self, then you're doing better than meditation. Because you're not attached to the fruits. You're just doing it because it has to be done. And then even if your capacity is just that you maybe can just sit like this a little bit. But you're so devoted, you understand? You're desperately trying to find God. You're so sincere. And then you're trying to follow Yama and Niyama. That's the one really doing yoga, right? So
kind of to steer back into that is, how do you approach asana? You know, kind of as I was hinting on before, how do you approach asana so that it is, you know, it is fitting, it is relevant to this process of self-realization, and it isn't outside of the other limbs of yoga?
Well, you have to remember that the physical is very high karma to have human birth. There are billions of souls waiting for incarnation. So we are very fortunate. According to the yoga system, it is said that only in the human, because of the complexity of the nervous system, can one achieve self-realization. So we have a great opportunity here. All those lifetimes of suffering through various incarnations to finally be here. Now we have this great tool to accelerate the path of self-realization. If your psychic channels are clogged, blocked with impurities through improper living, if you're not following Yama, if your diet is not too good, then your meditation is not going to go anywhere. Because to keep you safe, you understand, is to protect the student. Because even if you're doing like some people, they can raise the kundalini, but they do it too quickly. When people do drugs, they alter their state of consciousness before they're ready. Then they see something they're not ready for, and they flip out, jump out of a window, end up in a mental institution, because what they saw is real, but they're just not ready for it yet. So this said the same for a yogi. The psychic channels must be involved in purification. And then as you purify your psychic channels, slowly, under the guidance of the preceptor, you have to follow it to the letter. You can't alter anything or mix it around, because yoga is a science. Then you become fit for the various levels of consciousness to awaken. And the asanas, the postures, are a part of the purification process. They are designed to awaken various states of consciousness. Like my guru, he's very well known for a famous poster, the original poster, the real one, before the new ones started popping up or whatever, the original Dharma Mitra, the 908 asana poster. When he was doing that poster, he told me, he said, you know, Chandra, first it was an offering to the guru, but also he wanted to have it accessible to everyone in one place, instead of having to see a few in this book, a few there. If you're really serious, you like the exercises, if you're young and you have that capacity, then they're all in one place. But most importantly, he said, you know why there were so many? Because every pose is for a particular person. Every pose is designed based on the angles of the posture, the angles that the body assumes when it's in the particular asana. Each asana has a specific consciousness inside of it. As your body slowly over time assumes the correct angles, and then you hold the posture, 5 breaths, 10 breaths, whatever, that consciousness begins to awaken inside of you. So the warrior pose has a particular state of consciousness inside of it. The shavasana, a specific state of consciousness. You understand? So that's why some people, no problem, they can do ekapadasirsasana, the leg behind the head posture, first yoga class, because they've done it in the past. They came into this incarnation with that knowledge already there. But then maybe they try to do the handstand. They're stumbling like a beginner, you understand? Because there's something inside of that consciousness that consciousness has not been born yet inside of them. But you keep working, very soon it's going to. So the asana is first and foremost involved in the purification process. That if you want to be able to sit for extended periods in concentration, self-reflection, the machine must be healthy. It's very difficult to sit if your knees are talking to you. Or if even, let's say, for some reason you're blessed with, this doesn't bother you, but your food is not so good, then you have all kinds of digestive issues or just cravings. Like, let's say maybe you're young, 20 or something, and the effects haven't begun to show, but still you sit and the mind will not leave you alone because all the food is constantly, you're constantly satisfying cravings and desires. You have no self-control yet. Your diet is very rajasic, perhaps, then even though the machine may not be bothering you, you can't go anywhere because the moment you begin to sit, you feel the effects on the mental plane. So the postures are designed to aid, and if you really like the hatha yoga, to accelerate the purification process so that the consciousness can lift safely. And then, of course, if you know a little bit more, then you realize that as you assume the posture and you don't fidget, you want to come into it, fine, you move a little bit, get everything aligned properly, but then you don't keep moving. You understand? You don't fidget, don't be fickle. Stay there, become still. Very soon, a thought is going to come into the mind based on the posture you're in, the consciousness inside of it, just like the animals. You're really doing the Bhujangasana, the cobra pose, correctly. You're going to begin to feel like a cobra. Your spine, did you ever have that? You feel so strong, like you're about to strike something. You understand? Then you really understand the consciousness inside of that. But the best, the most important, if you ever use this for anything, please don't edit this out. Every posture must be an offering to the Supreme Self. You must be an offering to the Lord. You're not doing it because you're trying to achieve something or because you have, it's not born of personal desire. The postures must be done as an offering to the Lord. You do it because it has to be done. That's all. Then you really practicing yoga. And then it's better than meditation. You do your posture. I don't know why I'm doing this, just because it has to be done. So, also, That's something I don't want to say too much. I don't want to offend anyone, but sometimes you see, like these days, the people, they're going to have a heart attack sometimes, I think. The students, not my students, but the people, the everything is so rajasic. My guru, when he was teaching me the postures, always, your heart rate must not increase. Your pulse stay even. Never lose your breath. You must be fully concentrated. If you're interested in the more advanced postures, you have to build slowly. You have to be patient. You can't force the handstand before it's ready. Then you see, like the students here, they're not sweating all over the place. They're not striving, you understand? If you have determination, that's good. But it must be a determination. You're doing it to find God. You cultivate self-control and perseverance and determination for concentration on the Supreme Self. Then as you're doing the postures, you realize it's time to stop for today. Or, I think I injured myself because I was a little too... I lost my concentration. I began to strive. I was personally invested in achieving something. I think that is lacking a little bit these days. But that's okay too. But I feel I wish for everyone to feel nice and to be able to have these teachings that are so available to us through the grace of the living link of the Masters, the history that they have left us, that I hope that people maybe get a little more interested in the other components of the science of yoga. But of course I understand that everybody is interested in different things based on their temperament. So they all come out right in the end.
Would you tell us a little about your space here, the North Carolina School of Yoga in Raleigh? Could you tell us how that came about?
Oh, well, the students built this space. There's a big family here. They just come together always. If they see something has to be done, they just do it. Lots of karma yoga.
So here you offer not only weekly classes, but you offer teacher trainings as well.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That are in this lineage of classical yoga.
Yes. In the lineage of my guru,
right.
Sri Dharma Mitra. And classical yoga, traditional. This school was an offering for my guru. As I began to look around in the mid-90s, I was seeing that yoga was beginning to gain popularity. And it seemed like as the popularity grew, the climate became more commercial, or that it became more like a commodity. And I realized that I began to have students come to me and say, I would think I'd like to become a yoga teacher. Where can I go? And at that time, my guru did not do teacher trainings, nor did I. And so I tried to investigate a little bit for them. Then maybe there's Yogaville, or maybe one or two other places, the Shivananda trainings and things, but then I realized, well, I want them to have the full teaching. You understand, the full traditional studentship inside of a program. So I went to the guru and explained, and we put a little program together over about 2 years or so. And then finally it happened. But my main motivation was, and remains, to promote, to preserve, and to promote the teachings of my guru, because I saw that it wasn't happening. And I saw that my guru had spent 50 years in service to humanity disseminating spiritual knowledge and teaching yoga as the path to self-realization. And I believe in this science so deeply, and I feel like so many can benefit from it. So I wanted to have a place where people could go if they were interested in studying traditional yoga in the way that I learned it, and to share, really to share, the spiritual knowledge that my guru imparted to me. My guru always said that spiritual knowledge is meant to be shared. You don't keep it for yourself. You have to have discrimination to realize, don't waste it, you understand? Don't just give it to anyone. But if you see a student is really sincere, they're really looking for something, you have to give everything you know. That's it. You don't just keep it, you have to share it. Spiritual knowledge, you have to share what you have been given. And so I wanted to offer just traditional yoga, and then there's an offering to my guru, and then also to preserve the teachings. And so,
would you speak on karma yoga and service?
Well, anything that I know, I learned from my guru. And my guru was a karma yogi for 10 years in the ashram. And then I learned by example that the karma yoga must be, well, it's generally inside of the class, inside traditional yoga, the karma yoga is the first step, you understand? Of course, yama is the foundation of yoga, but I'm talking about the generally the karma, then the bhakti. I don't know if I should talk about this. This too, not what you want.
No, please do.
Okay.
Please do.
Well, I just saw that karma yoga was an essential part. I just learned to copy the guru. Anything the guru did, I thought was the thing to do. So if he did it, I better do that. And I was very fortunate that he allowed me to. And then I just did karma yoga for the guru, and then go help him with anything he needs. For some reason, I had very good fortune to be the assistant to the guru, to be Dharma's, to schedule his appointments, and to travel with him, to see to some of his personal needs and to take care of things. And karma yoga allows the disciple or the student to polish the mind and heart simultaneously, because as you are washing the steps or cutting vegetables or returning a phone call or teaching free classes or doing any number of things that might be needed at the ashram or wherever your teacher's home base is, that you really watch the mind flip out about so many things. I remember my guru has all of these steps that go up to his center. There's two or three long flights of stairs. And I used to be there scrubbing the steps, one step, rinse, second step, then the next, then the next. And at first I would think, you know, I don't need to be doing this. There's so many other things I could be doing, so many other things. Maybe this is not the place. Well, actually, I never thought that, actually. But I thought about cheating. I thought of ways I could get around it. Maybe do it quickly, scrub half the step, just slap a little water on it, that you understand? Because the mind. But then very slowly, you know, then I would finish doing that, then I would go sit for satsang, or I would be with the guru and I would hear him say something just in passing. And then I would feel so guilty. I would think, you don't even deserve to be here. You should be lucky to sweep these steps, to scrub them. And then I felt renewed. I had a renewed determination, renewed enthusiasm. And then it got to the point where I couldn't wait to wash the steps. I would prefer to wash the steps or to be doing something than to be in class. You understand? I figured, these are my teachings. I get everything from the guru. Let somebody else have the space in class today. So, I think that the karma yoga is an essential practice in the full science of yoga. And generally, it's one of the steps that should be introduced early on in the aspirant's practice, because it really will purify the mind and heart. And then you see who's not too serious. And that's unfortunate, because then they leave. But that's the way it is. Otherwise, I don't know. That's enough. I think karma yoga is an essential practice in the science.
I feel really fortunate to have been able to come here and speak with you and take a class with you, and it does feel very refreshing to see that these teachings that have been passed down for so long that they are being preserved, and it feels real and it feels genuine. So I thank you for doing that.
Oh, yes. I don't know how this happened. You understand? Please don't misunderstand. There are millions of others doing it as well. There's nothing special about me. I don't know how it happened. But I just feel very fortunate to be a vehicle for something to pass through. But I owe everything to my guru, and I would not know anything if it wasn't for him, if he was not constantly guiding me and sharing and imparting spiritual knowledge. So I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to impart his teachings. And I don't know, maybe you see, there are so many serious students here. So many. There's people that come from all over. The Sabina, she's here for 3 weeks from Prague. And she comes back every once in a while. There's so many people traveling, different things. So when you said earlier, do I think that in the West they're ready for... I say yes. Really, from my heart, I believe that. I know not everyone has that karma or that temperament or that inclination. Some will always just be interested in the physical. And that's okay, because they'll still get some benefits. A little yoga is better than none. But everywhere I go, everywhere, every place that I go to teach, I see, right? There's people crying. Then they come the next day. I'm never going to touch meat again, Chandra. I promise. Because we talk about yama and niyama in the purification lecture. And then they see, and then I do believe that people are very hungry for more of the traditional teaching. I didn't think about that before when you asked the question, so I don't know if you can edit that or something. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and I'm very honored that you asked to speak a little bit about yoga.
For more information on Chandra and the North Carolina School of Yoga, please visit www.ncschoolofyoga.com. You can view video clips from this interview on Chandra's iHanuman teacher page at iHanuman.com/ChandraOM, ChandraOM. Thank you for helping to build the bridge with iHanuman. Namaste.